Now we turn to part two. Recall that we spent a fair amount of time now thinking about what are the issues with respect to the fidelity of the data coming from the transducer. Now we turn to part two, which is the fidelity of the data when it's converted from an analog to a digital value. The bottom line is that AD conversion can distort the value of the signal. Let's talk a little bit about why that might be. I'm going to do that by considering something that you might be familiar with, a comparator. And basically, a comparator says there's some threshold value of the input. Here's the input value. Here's the output value. There's some threshold value of the input value that the output switches from a number, say, we'll call it A, to B. So we have an electronic circuit that takes an analog input and gives it one of two possible values at the output. And in many cases, we set A equals 0 and B equals 1. So if we think about this, this is a 1-bit analog to digital converter. Now, a couple things can happen. The first thing is, obviously, we have a lot of error. If the output is a 0 or a 1, then clearly we are reducing the amount of information that we have about that input signal, which is some analog value, and we can say it's x between some range minus r over 2 and plus r over 2. So there's what we call quantization noise. So one of our things is quantization noise. There are also possible biases. And so that could mean where this point in which we shift from between A and B at the output can actually shift back and forth, biasing the value that we get. And each of these biases can occur in a different quantization. So I've shown you a 1-bit A to D here. Down here is a multi-bit A to D, and you can see here is the input on this axis, and here's the output on this axis. The input is a smooth analog value, but you can see the output only has these values going from 000 up to 111, so it's a 3-bit A to D, and you can see there is a consistent bias all the way through here. Now, just to give you an idea here, one simple way to remove this bias is to change the characteristic so that it is more like this. I'm not doing a good job here, but you get the idea. I'm going to try to center the bins so that I have less bias. So that bias here is consistent throughout, but you also can have varying bias, which will lead to nonlinearities. And obviously, a 1-bit analog to digital converter has two quantization bins, not a very high-quality device, but very, very cheap. And this has to do with the resolution. One of the goals of this class is to connect you with the other courses that you're taking and try to integrate the subdisciplines of electrical engineering. So let's look at a classic signal processing model of the analog to digital converter. We have a signal, XA of T, where the A denotes analog, and the first thing that happens is it goes into a device called a sampler, so we'll put sample here. And that's usually denoted like this. And what comes out is xn with square brackets. And you can see that this signal here is discrete time, whereas this signal here was continuous time. So the first step of analog to digital conversion is sampling. Then we go into another block here called quantization, and we'll write quantize here. So here's where we take our discrete time signal and quantize it, and we usually symbolize this with a comparator sort of graphic. And the output is, we'll call xq of n. Then finally, the next step and last step is encoding. So we'll write encode here. And this is where we basically take this value, this quantized value, and encode it in some sort of bit stream. We'll call it xd of n. And it's usually some kind of lookup table. And the idea here is that we represent that quantized value using some string of bits. And this is where we get a b-bit quantizer. Now, one thing I want to point out is that there are two kinds of errors that come into play here. The first one is in the sampling. And this is classic signal processing, where you're trying to set up the sampling interval, or the sampling frequency, or the sampling rate of the signal. And if you remember, there is a frequency called a Nyquist frequency. And you usually have to be at least two times that. And usually in practice, you're about four times the Nyquist frequency for your sampling rate. The second is quantization errors. And this has to do with the fact that we're taking a signal that is continuous in amplitude and turning it into a signal that's discrete in amplitude. So here's the cool thing. You're basically saying that x of a here is a continuous time, continuous amplitude signal. X sub n is discrete time and continuous amplitude. And finally, xq of n is discrete in both time and in amplitude. So in the coming slides here, we're going to focus mostly on the errors that we get in quantization and try to understand the answer to the question, how many bits do we need? What is the number of bits of resolution that I need to get a high quality signal? Another way of thinking about the question, how many bits do I need of resolution in my analog to digital converter, is to translate into what level of quantization noise can I tolerate? Notice we use the word noise, which is kind of loaded these days because we think of it as a random signal when we use the word noise. So we have to be clear about that, and I will do that. But let's first just go over the basics. As we mentioned very early on, that a B-bit quantizer, or a B-bit analog to digital converter, has 2 to the B quantization bins. And if the range, in other words, the input range is R, and this might be, say, from 0 to 2.5 volts in a real system that you would actually build, then the resolution is equal to R over 2 to the B. So the resolution you can think of as the bin width of each bin. So smaller resolution is better. If we have greater number of bits, then for a fixed R, we get a lower resolution, which means that there is less of this quantization noise. Let's take another look at the transfer characteristic of an analog to digital converter. Here's the input. Here's the output. If we had an ideal device with an infinite resolution, the output would look just like the input, but somehow magically digital. So we would just encode the information. However, we aren't that lucky, and we end up with something that might look like this, where all of the analog values in this region here are translated to a digital value right here. So this interval here is the bin size or quantization interval, and we can call that delta sub b. For b bits, delta sub b is equal to the range of the input, the allowable input, over 2 to the number of bits b. So if we look at this again in another way, here we have all the possible input values, and this is separated into uniform size bins of size delta sub b. And here's the trick. Up here, all these analog values get represented as one digital value right here. And again here, if I take these central points, these are the points that I use to represent all the values in each of the bins that you see here. So the trick here is that if I blow up one of these bins so that it's now this wide, and here's my representative value, then as values come in to the analog to digital converter, they can be any of these values, and all of them are represented as this one central value right here. So we have quantization error, but we have to come up with a way to model this error, and that's what we'll talk about next. Let's take another look at this quantization bin. We have our quantized representative value, usually in the middle. This interval here is delta B. And we mentioned that the input values could be anywhere in this continuum. To model this, we go back and we use again the tools from probability and statistics. Now, the rationale for this is that assuming that an analog value falls into this bin, it's equally likely to be any possible value in this continuum. So we model it as a uniform distribution. And it's almost as if you had a six-sided die, which you know is uniform in the sense that the probability of it landing snake eyes is equal to the probability of it landing 5 or 6 or any other value. And we take this idea of uniform distribution and we take that die actually and we say, we imagine that has an infinite number of values between, say, this value and this one. And so we model this as a uniform distribution in the range from minus delta B over 2 to delta B over 2. Because it's uniform, it's going to be flat. That's what we mean by uniform, and I didn't draw that very flat, did I? But we'll try to fix it here. And if you remember, all the probabilities have to sum, or in this case, integrate to 1. In other words, the area has to be equal to 1. And so the height of this distribution is 1 over delta B. And so this gives us a model for this quantization error. And the idea here is that it's uniformly distributed between minus delta B over 2 and delta B over 2. So remember, we're viewing this as quantization noise. So we can just write quantization noise here. So it has this new random model here. And because it has a distribution, it has a mean. And our mean is what we'll call Q sub I, the quantized value since it's in the middle. And the variance, turns out, you can compute this, is delta B squared over 12. Now this makes a little bit of sense. If delta B gets bigger, in other words, the resolution gets worse, then we have a larger variance of our quantization noise. And this can be represented also as a power, because remember, variance is our statistical measurement of power. And so now we have an understanding of the quantization noise that happens in an analog to digital converter. The other assumption is that this quantization error is uniform in all bins, not just in bin I, where the output value is Q sub I. Now we have a good model for the power or variance of the quantization noise. So now we'd like to be able to calculate the improvement that we get in going from a B-bit analog to digital converter to a B plus 1 bit converter. So let's assume that the signal power is P. This is the input signal. Then we define something called the SQNR, which is the signal to quantization noise ratio. Okay, so what we really should say is a signal power to quantization noise power ratio. But let's go ahead and write down the definition for that. It's SQNR of B is equal to P, which is our signal power, over delta B squared over 12, which is our quantization noise power. And this is then proportional to P over delta B squared. Now notice that if we go from B to B plus 1, we can write that delta B plus 1, the quantization noise interval, is delta B over 2. In other words, if we go from a 10-bit to an 11-bit analog to digital converter, then our quantization bin size is halved. And this should reduce our quantization noise power. Let's go ahead and compute that. We can write SQNR of B plus 1 over SQNR of B and determine what that is. Just by plugging in values, we get delta B squared on the top, delta B plus 1 squared on the bottom. Plugging in here, our value for the relationship between delta B plus 1 and delta B over 2, we get a ratio of 4, which is 6 dB. So, this is the rule of thumb that says that you get a 6 dB gain in SQNR for each additional quantization bit. And this is a classic result that allows you to say, well, okay, what really should I be looking for? Now, important rule of thumb. Quantization noise is something that you have a fair amount of control of because you can spend more on an A to D converter with more bits of resolution. Remember that we had quantization noise, which we've talked about, but also measurement or transducer noise. And a good rule of thumb is that the quantization noise power you're dealing with, you should really design your system so that it's about 1/10 of the transducer noise power, because you really don't want your signal processing, the conversion from analog to digital, to have any kind of dominant effect on the overall performance of the system, because you do have some control of that, and you can do that by spending money. We are now pretty much at the end of Module 4 on analog to digital conversion, and I wanted to address just a couple remaining questions that are important in design that we haven't had time to discuss. The first is how often to sample. And this, of course, gets into the idea of the sampling rate of our system. I touched on that briefly in talking about the Nyquist frequency and the Nyquist rate that you learn or have already learned in your signals and systems class. Another question is where to sample. Where should we put our sensors? And the answers to that question are actually very difficult, and it's actually an open area of research. The simple answer is that the people who are designing the experiment, and this might be an environmental scientist or an ecologist, will say, I think I need to put my sensors here and here and here, maybe next to a particular tree or along the shore of a lake, all that kind of thing. And that is often an intuition sort of exercise. Now, a more complicated, more principled approach is to say, what is my expectation about what I'm trying to sample? And this gets into something called a spatial sampling rate. And the deal here is that we treat space just like we treat time when we think about temporal sampling rate. So instead of a sampling rate in inverse seconds, we look at a sampling rate in inverse meters. And this, of course, relates back to spatial frequency instead of temporal frequency. The next question here is how to encode the information for transmission. And basically the idea here is if you go back to our very first module, we talked about putting together a packet. The packet containing the data that we've just spent all this effort to transduce, analog signal process, convert to digital, and then do digital signal processing. We need to package it up. And this, of course, gets into what we've already talked about in source coding in channel coding. So we'll be talking a little bit about that. And then finally, the sort of top level picture is, again, we've taken this value from our system. We have a number which somehow represents the physical phenomenon. And how do we use that ultimately for construction of models about the environment? Let's place what we've done in analog, digital, and mixed signal processing in the context of the overall diagram for this course. So we've talked a lot about sensing here, and we can think of this as connecting a transducer to a sensor. So we spoke a lot about how to manage the sensing. We also talked a little bit about embedded control, because the analog to digital converter, as well as some analog electronics, may be on chip with the microcontroller. These things are all designed in the context of the application or the embedding environment. So all these issues come to play because they will drive the transducer design, which in turn then drives how we manage the electrical signal produced by that transducer.